Hello and welcome to another episode of Transmission. Today we're joined by Marzia Zafar from Ofgem, and the episode is all about consumer flexibility. So how do we enable flexibility in today's market, and how does that help us hit Clean Power 2030? From the episode, I really like the elements that are essentially describing how the decision to go towards more consumer flexibility is essentially no regret in many ways, but also how consumer flexibility is turning into something that is more of a economic benefit, both for the consumer, but also for the wider grid. Let's jump in. Hello, Marzia, and welcome to Transmission.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
So we're going to kick off in the usual place. So please, could you introduce yourself, but could you also introduce Ofgem as well?
Perfect. So my name is Marzia Zafar. I'm a deputy director at Ofgem. I have been working in the energy industry for almost 30 years, which saddens me because now I realize that I'm really old as well. I started with Sempra Energy Utilities in California. There, I was selling demand-side response, which in those days for us was, let's figure out how to replace a boiler or how to make the energy, the C&I customer more efficient. After that, there was an energy crisis in 2001, and a lot of my clients lost their business. It was a very strange period, and I couldn't figure out why. So I moved to the regulatory side, and there I realized, okay, what here are the market distortions that happened that allowed this crisis to happen. From that point on, I moved to the California Public Utilities Commission. So after spending 10 years with the Sempra Energy Utilities, I spent another 10 years with the California PUC. Former Governor Schwarzenegger had appointed me to look after and advise him on overall smart grid technologies. So I spent about 10 years there. And then after 20 years in California, my partner just got bored and said, let's go to Europe. And I said, okay, let's do it. And then I worked for the World Energy Council for a couple of years, just traveling the world, talking about energy efficiency and demand response. Then I realized that I was missing the technology side of the energy side. You know, I had spent 22 years there in energy, but I really didn't understand what a billing platform, how difficult it is to build, how what are the ins and outs of it. So I worked for Kaluza and OVO, the technology arm of OVO Energy, for 2 years, and I learned about software development. I learned about product development, and realized how difficult it is when a regulatory body says go create this tariff, or figure out market-wide half-hourly settlement. You know, that's a nice waving hand of regulatory say, go do this. But to implement that through the billing platform, through the IT system, it's extremely difficult. So I spent 2 years there, and then I came back to regulation, where my heart is, and that's where Ofgem is. So Ofgem is an economic regulator. We look after making sure that the energy system works for the customer. And to do that, we have to balance. There's a lot of trade-offs that we have to do, making sure that we need a viable market in order to have customer service, customer protection, and better overall propositions for the customer.
What a great intro. And we are going to have some listeners in California as well who will be interested to kind of see some of the parallels you draw between CAISO and GB and Europe
PUC,
as well.
California PUC.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. So let's get started on consumer flexibility. Why are you focusing on consumer flexibility?
So consumer flexibility, or flexibility as a whole, it is, you know, it's basically a tool for the system to balance supply and demand without having to ramp up supply, because you ramp up supply, you ramp up cost to the customer. If we don't do this, we then have to build a lot of generation, a lot of pipes and wires to bring that generation to the customer. All of this costs money, and we have to get to net zero. So to do all of this, we're trying to find different ways to bring to the customer cheaper, cleaner electricity. And how to do that, one of the tools that we have is to ask the customer to shift their consumption in a convenient manner. You know, we're not asking people to turn off their electricity, their refrigeration, or their heating system, what demand response is, at least consumer-led flexibility, is to try to figure out if there's a convenient way for the customer to shift their consumption from a time where the system is constrained to a time where the system is not constrained.
Yeah. So, I mean, imagining that like in sort of all the power flows that go on with the system, that last megawatt, that last megawatt hour that a consumer is using doesn't get used that often. But essentially, you have to get the generation capacity to make it. You have to get the poles and wires and the transmission and the distribution network to manage it. And actually, instead of having the generation capacity, the transmission and the distribution and all of the planning and building that goes on within that, plus all the financing on top as well, you could just shift that energy to another period.
Yeah, because it costs money and ultimately the customer pays for it. If we have to put more generation on the system, if we have to build the system more, it's all money, and that comes from the customer. So this is a way to try to lessen the burden on the customer.
And what does that look like? What does the consumer flex journey look like for consumers?
So for us, and I think if you talk to any market participant in the UK, we have to automate it. The customer cannot be inconvenienced in any way, shape, or form. The journey has to be automated, and it should involve, first of all, awareness. We have to make sure that the customer knows what consumer-led flexibility, demand response, what it is, how they can participate, what does it mean for them. So that awareness is important. Enrollment, bringing that customer into the system, and then automation. How do we automate the journey so the customer just sets their preferences, and then technology makes it work. And then ultimately, at the end, a reward. We need to reward the customer for shifting their consumption, or else why would they do it? And some people may do it out of the goodness of their heart. Some people may want that price signal, and we want to give that option to the customer. So it's about awareness, enrollment, automation, and ultimately a reward system for the customer.
Okay. And would it look somewhat similar to kind of what we have today? So in previous years, we've had the demand flexibility service, so DFS. Do you think that would be the kind of scheme that would roll on into future periods? Or does that kind of go and does it morph into something else?
I'm sure DFS will evolve into something else. DFS has been very successful for us. It is a manual demand response product. If you look at, for instance, EVs, if we can figure out a way, and we are, to send the right signals to the electric vehicle charging to charge it off-peak times. And right now, I think the law is that by default, EVs are charged at off-peak times, but a customer can override that. And they don't have an incentive to do one or the other, right? So we need to create an incentive for them. We're bringing in, so suppliers can create propositions for customers to do this, to remotely control, to remotely manage their charging. So the customer ultimately in the morning says, when I wake up in the morning, I want my EV to be charged 100% by 8 a.m. And they're going to plug it in at, say, 2 p.m. the day before. As long as that electric vehicle is charged by 8 a.m. for the customer doesn't care if it's charged at 2 p.m. in the afternoon the day before or at 2 a.m. in the morning. That's the kind of automation that we want. We want the customer to say, 8 a.m., I want it fully charged. Then we want the system to do the work, to balance it such that it comes in when the system is not fully constrained.
Yeah, I think this is super interesting, kind of as you go from, as you say, a more sort of manual DFS into something that feels much more like the customer doesn't even know it's happening, yet they're saving money for themselves, they're saving money for the system, and they're still getting exactly the same end product, right?
Yes, but the customer has to make the choice though. Okay. So that's why that awareness is key. The customer has to say, I want my car charged by 8 a.m. in the morning, and I want to flex. Because we can't force it onto the customer. The customer has to make that choice. And that's the only thing I think the customer should make. Make the choice, but then technology should do the work for the customer. And then they should get some sort of reward in terms of lower bills or something like that.
Yeah, because in your example, if the car is being plugged in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they may also know, oh, I need to go and pick my friend up from the train station at 4 o'clock. So actually, it has to charge in the next 2 hours. So they need a bit of choice in terms of how they do that. I mean, the nice part is that they never need to go to a petrol station, which is, you know, a different topic.
Yeah.
Okay. And so Obviously, we have the sort of tools in consumer flexibility today, so DFS being one of them. How does that change over the next 5 to 10 years? What does kind of the roadmap of that change look like?
So right now, a lot of system reforms are happening to enable the market participants to come up with different propositions, more attractive propositions for the customers. And, you know, the system, the retail market may change a lot as a result of these reforms. For instance, the Energy Securities Act of 23 looked at aggregators, load controllers, to say, you know, for the past couple of decades, we've had aggregators in the market, but they play a very small role. So governments saw that this could be aggregators could have an expanded role. And what aggregators can do once we make them a licensable activity is they can go to the customer and say, if I offer you X, Y, and Z, your bill is going to be lowered by 5%, 10%, but you have to let me flex, you have to let me remotely manage your smart devices. And that's the proposition that the aggregator can make, that the supplier can make. So we think that once aggregators come into the market, that's going to push suppliers as well as aggregators to bring better customer service, better customer propositions into the market for customers to choose from. There aren't enough smart devices in the system for us to really make this work. And at the same time, there's a lot of barriers in the system right now. So that's why we've introduced a Flex Market Facilitator. And the market facilitator that we've appointed is Alexion. And we've told Alexion that look at all the products that are in the market right now. Look at the NISO ancillary services. Look at, this is the NISO's the system operator for Great Britain. Look at all the distribution network companies, the DSOs and the DNOs products, and figure out, make sure that all the rules and regulations are aligned. So for instance, if one product says you have to have 1 megawatt and you have to have this type of requirement, we want all the products to have the same requirements because it takes that friction out. You know, if an aggregator or a supplier wants to go into market X and they have a set of requirements and then they go to market Y and it's a different set of requirements, it just makes it difficult to stack those revenues. It makes it difficult to participate in those products. So what Alexion will do is facilitate this in a way where the system operator, NISO, and the DNOs, the network companies, can align their rules such that all it's just one set of rules rather than 20 sets of rules.
So how does that actually work? Because I can see how Alexion fit into it in terms of they are extremely capable on like the data aggregation and data management side. But let's say you've got a distribution network operator one and distribution network operator two, and one of them says, oh, it needs to be 1 megawatt for a minute, and the other one says it needs to be 1 megawatt for 2 minutes. And those are the rules. That's just how they've always been forever. And you come along and say, well, actually, you guys need to work out which one of those two it is. Obviously, they would rather just stay where they are and make the other person change to what theirs is. So like, who is actually going to kind of force them to make sure they actually all have the same thing?
So we have put this in their license conditions that you have to abide by what the market facilitator will do. So obviously, we don't want the market facilitator to be a dictator there to say, I want this, make it happen. There's going to be a process in place where there's going to be committees, there's going to be discussions, and we hope that that convening space can bring people together. And ultimately, if there's any disagreements and if Alexion can't fix it, it's going to fall onto Ofgem where they identify to say, we have come up with these ideas, they will propose it, and then we will ultimately have to make that decision. But we hope it doesn't get to that level. We hope that when DNOs come to the table and NISO comes to the table, that this convening space, this committee and the advisory groups around them can align the rules without us coming in and putting the hammer down.
Yes, and I think that's actually a really, really nice description of how Ofgem intervenes and is active in the market, and how in lots of ways the GB power system is led by industry rather than being sort of a forced process. I think that was a really good example to run through. So just going back to the flexibility side, how do we make sure that flexibility is for everyone and not just for, you know, a savvy group of customers?
Why wouldn't it be for everybody? Everybody can change their consumption from point A to point B. everybody can reduce their consumption today. We're not creating something that somehow it's exclusive to anybody, because anybody can flex, anybody can be energy efficient, anybody can think twice about turning on their washing machine at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because their bills are high today. And if they continue to do that, they're going to receive those high bills. So it's a choice. I think that overall awareness is important for us and for the market participants to say, this is for everybody. Just because you don't have an electric vehicle and this electric vehicle tariff doesn't apply to you, that doesn't mean we're restricting you or excluding you from the process. You don't have an electric vehicle, so you can't apply for the EV tariff. But you still can not use your washing machine at 2 o'clock in the afternoon if you don't want to. If you wanted to, you can. So I don't buy this argument when a lot of people say, well, let's make sure Flux is for everybody. It is for everybody. Why are we creating these, we have so many other problems to solve and we're adding like non-problems and making them problems.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a funny thing. The energy industry does this a lot, where effectively you have two people who are in very similar places. They, having got to those places, they almost agree on every single thing. But if you put them in a room together, they will find a way to disagree, even though they are super aligned on everything that's got them to that particular point.
We just don't have time for this right now. We don't have time. We have Clean Power 2030. We have a huge target to meet. We don't have time to go around and come and chase every single risk, chase every single question. Let's chase the opportunity. Let's chase the opportunity of getting us to clean power by 2030.
Yeah. So maybe if I rephrase that question, I think where you're coming from is that as long as we sort of fairly reward people for shifting energy. So if I provide a service that's worth £100 to the grid in terms of lower balancing costs, but I get paid £90 for it, there's still £10 spare. And so that can get socialized across everyone. So if I've bought an EV and that EV is kind of doing that work, I suppose the flip side would be if I'm providing £90 worth of service, but I'm getting paid £100 for it, then effectively I'm getting overpaid for my flexibility, and therefore someone's going to have to end up like carrying the cost of flexibility. But I think you would say that as long as you design flexibility right, not a problem.
Exactly. And if we don't figure out a way to bring in the EV owner into the fold, then the non-EV owner is going to pay for the EV owner's added consumption. And that's what I think we're missing here, is that we are so focused on making sure that we don't over-reward the EV customer, that we're forgetting that EV customer is bringing on an additional probably 1,800 kilowatt hours of load onto the system per year. And that means we have to build a system for that. So if we have 5 million EVs, potentially we have 5 gigawatts of additional load right onto the system. Everyone's going to pay for that unless we figure out a way to take that 5 gigawatts and make it a flexible 5 gigawatt. And then people will pay less.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you see things like negative pricing in the wholesale market. So if you can get that 5 gigawatts to the right moment, all of a sudden you can make a system that's working better.
Yeah.
Okay, you mentioned CP30, Clean Power 2030. What are the flexibility targets that are set within Clean Power 2030 and how can we hit them?
So Clean Power 2030, and I'm going to look to NESO published a Clean Power 2030 report. DESNZ then came up with an action plan. And the next step is a roadmap that's going to be published by DESNZ with input from Ofgem and NESO as well. And this will be sometime in July. So looking back at the NESO report that was first published, the flexibility goal is about 12.7 gigawatts of consumer-led flex by 2030. And then if you look in more detail, they definitely put categories into that. So I think it's 4.5 gigawatts of flux from EV owners, and about, I think, 1.1 from general demand response. So anybody who wants to shift their load, they can do it. There's about, I think, 1.9 gigawatts from V2G. And then there's, I think, 1.1 from CNI, so I can't remember the rest, but overall 12.7. And that doesn't include storage heaters, because if you include storage heaters, then we move from 12 to between up to 16 gigawatts. how do we get to this? Can we get to this? Is that the question?
Yeah.
Why not? I think we've spent, what I get frustrated about is since the report has been published, since the action plan has been out there, everybody's trying to figure out ways to show that we can't get to that. And it drives me crazy. Why do we do this? Why don't we try to put all that energy into finding ways of how we can get there? And to us, there are multiple ways of us. We have to do a lot. This by no means is a tiny, tiny little goal. If you think about it and you look globally, our 12.7 gigawatts by 2030 is the second highest target flexibility target in the world. The first one is China at 65 gigawatts. Obviously, there are more households there. There are more people there. So they can. That's why their goal is so high. The next highest goal is us at 12.7 with 28 million households. California is at 7 gigawatts.
As in today or their target?
Their target, sorry. Okay. So California's target for 2030, I believe, is 7 gigawatts, and they have 14 million households. So we have China at 65 gigawatts. We'll just leave them off this. But California is, I think, 40 million people, 14 million households. Right now, their target is 7 gigawatts. Ours, we're about 67 million people, 28 million households. Our target is 12.7 gigawatts. So it's a gigantic target. It is a moonshot target. But I think unlike any other moonshot, this is a gettable target if we do all the right things and we do it fast. Hmm. I think the key is doing this fast. If we can go at speed, we can do it. The things that we need to do is we need to think about mandation. We need to think about customer awareness. First and foremost, we have to think about who is going to tell the customer, who's going to inform the customer that this is a good thing for the system, for the customer, for their bills. And then we look at potentially time of use rates. If you look at California, the reason they're successful so far is because everybody's on time of use. And I think they're moving towards dynamic time of use. If you look at China, they have a lot of, they're heavily regulated. So similar to California, China and California are heavily regulated. We are market driven, which means we set the rules, we let the market drive us, right? I think if we can come together as an industry to say, maybe come together as an industry and support the flexibility roadmap that's going to be published by DESNZ in late July. If everybody's aligned with that and we move forward with those actions, I don't see why we won't be able to meet it. We should be able to meet it. It's basically asking millions of customers to do the right thing and flex for the system to lower the bills for everybody. But we have to do it fast. Can we do it fast? I don't know. I want to.
Yeah, there is so much in there. So maybe a few logistics. So today is the 22nd of May. So just as we release this, if this ends up being closer to that flexibility roadmap, then just some context for listeners. I think the other thing that kind of struck me is that a lot of what you're talking about in terms of flexibility feels like a no regret option. So even if we get to 6 gigawatts, it's not like there's some sort of mistake that's been made. As long as that's built on sort of good fundamentals, so things like market-wide half-hourly settlements and time-of-use tariffs, that sets up, that is this sort of enablement work for the very future of kind of flexibility that we will end up delivering even post-2030. So even if we're moving fast, there's no issue there. One thing that people might find useful is just to think about that 12.7 gigawatts. How big would you say the flexibility market is today, just to give people a context?
Today, I think for the GB system, it's 3.8. We have so far about 3.8 gigawatts of flex load, excluding storage heaters.
Okay.
We have about 4 gigawatts of storage heater flexibility, but that's not counted towards the 12.7.
Okay.
So 12.7 minus 3.8 is what we need to get to.
Okay. And I think sometimes people struggle with gigawatts. So what I would say is that One of these absolutely massive power stations that you see are often something like 1.5 to 2 gigawatts in terms of size. And so when we talk about 3.8 gigawatts, really this is like two absolutely massive power stations that we haven't had to build as a result of having that flexibility.
Exactly. That is a very effective point. Thank you.
So maybe let's move on to some of the areas that you've seen work quite well. So what sort of trials have you looked at and thought this has been a really successful thing? We'd love to either expand that or replicate it.
NISO, OVO, and a bunch of partners have gotten together and they're working on a project called CrowdFlex. And what CrowdFlex does is they are trialing a bunch of propositions with customers, I think around 75,000 customers, to see what's going to work. And then ultimately, that's going to lead to NISO, the system operator, developing a probabilistic model of this is how much we can get based on the trials that we've done. And I think those trials most likely or maybe evolve into more trials so we can understand better. This is still a very nascent topic area because customers still don't know. I mean, some customers realize it, but we haven't done a full-scale awareness campaign to say, let's all flex.
What did CrowdFlex actually do?
CrowdFlex is a set of trials with customers to understand if they get some sort of financial incentive, okay, will they flex at the time that they were told to flex.
Okay, I'm with you. So of those 75,000 customers, how come we're not seeing that across all customers in GB today?
Okay, so just to be clear, the 75,000 customers, they're just in a trial period to figure out so we can understand and get data and then make decisions based on what customers will do depending on the push and pulls that they get through these trials. We just don't have that data today. We have, you know, Octopus has some data, OVO has some data, but as an industry, there's a lack of understanding around what the customer, what we need to do for the customer so they can flex. And so that's why we have these trials going on so we can understand what the customer wants and then develop propositions around around their needs.
Okay, fascinating. I think people are getting a really good insight in terms of what the roadmap looks like for flexibility and noting that later on this year, we will have a sort of more official roadmap released. But I can see a lot of these trends are going to be coming through within that document. So on to my final two questions. The first one is there anything that you'd like to plug?
I would like to plug the flexibility roadmap, actually, that's coming out that's going to be published sometime in July. I think it's really important. I mean, not for everyday household to read that, obviously, but it's important for industry participants to read it, to understand it. We need that alignment. If we cannot, there's, I would say, over 100 set of milestones and actions that we need to do. And DESNAS, Ofgem, and NISO, you know, we don't own the customer relationship. It's the supplier, it's the aggregator, it's the network company. We need them to get behind this and to implement this for the system.
Yeah, no, really interesting. I think we had a podcast very recently with Jess in Australia, and she was asked her contrarian view, and just what you were just talking about there just made me think about it. And her contrarian view was something along the lines of, we've always thought as an industry that we need to try and get all consumers to really be able to understand flexibility and be able to understand the niches of it. And her contrarian view was, actually, we need to forget about that. Actually, for many consumers, they need to know nothing about this. They don't need to be able to understand it. They just need to be able to benefit from it. Yes. And I thought, the pitfall we fall into all of the time is that we like energy markets and we like flexibility, so we try and explain it to everyone, and actually we don't need to. I think there's some really key players who need to know this, but actually for consumers, they just need to feel the benefit from it.
They need to get the benefit. You're absolutely right, and we cannot bother them with becoming energy managers and energy advisors. We can't bother them with that. They won't do it. What we need is attractive propositions for the customer to say, okay, I can do that. You know, for this much X reward, I'm okay with that. And it has to be easy. It has to be, you know, financially beneficial for them. And that's why, you know, these trials like CrowdFlex, like other trials, will help us understand what's going to take for the customer to do this.
Yeah, no, totally agreed. Okay, and on to my final question. So is there a contrarian view that you hold? So something that you believe that the majority of the market doesn't?
I would say that I think we can meet the goal. I would say the majority of the market participants are, you know, like I said earlier, are trying to find every which way to say, this is why we can't meet it. And I don't understand why we're doing this. I want us to stop that. I want us to start thinking on different ways where we could meet this. And if we don't meet it, it's means we can't get to clean power 2030. It means our path to 2050 net zero becomes that much more difficult and that much more expensive for the customer.
Yeah, I think that is very much on the money in terms of what you hear all of the time from industry, particularly in terms of CP30 and the challenge that it brings. Well, Marzia, that leads me to wrap up and say thank you very much for coming on. You've been a fantastic guest. I think so many people will benefit from understanding a little bit more what Consumer Flex looks like. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. I'm a fan of Moto Energy podcast, so thank you for having me.